The Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. Whatever stage your business is at, there's always time to imagine sustainable, positive change. AIB, for the life you're after.
Now, as I said, our next guest is from a world of cash. He grew up in Belfast against the backdrop of the Troubles. It was one of his first jobs in Securicor that gave him the idea for his own business. In 2005, he set up Pivotal, a cash in transit and cash management company. He's dealt with armed robberies, a tiger kidnapping, and he's a champion kickboxer. Terry Hughes of Pivotal, you're very welcome to the programme.
Many thanks, Richard. I'm delighted to be here.
Kickboxing, Terry, how did you get into that? I can see even from this distance that you're not a man to be trifled with. But when did you start in that?
Actually, when I was very young, I was 11 years old. And in all honesty, I was pretty terrible at all sports and pretty much everything, if I'm being totally honest. And I was out walking one day into the local leisure centre, and I seen the hall and guys, you know, participating in kickboxing. I was standing at the doorway, and the sensei said to me, "Are you coming in or close the door?" And I said, "Well, I don't have any money." And he said, "I didn't ask you if you had any money. I asked if you were coming in." And I went in, and the rest is history, as they say. So I'm still involved with the club now. It's called Body Shots. You know, I financially support the club. Although it's the last fight I had was a long, long time ago, 1993.
Why did you stop? Did it get too sore?
No, at that time I'd graduated from Queen's, and you know, I was planning to get married, and I realised, in all honesty, I wasn't going to make a career out of it. I wasn't good enough, you know. I think life and sport is about levels and respecting levels. And you know, when I fought guys at sort of at a national and British level, you know, I could absolutely compete. But when I stepped up into sort of European level, I realised that I was I was out of my depth.
It wasn't going to be worth the pain. Yeah. And you grew up in North Belfast.
Yeah.
During the Troubles, did that impinge on you much?
Well, not really, Richard, but I was born in 1970, so I knew nothing. It was my normal, you know, I knew nothing other than the situation I grew up in. And you know, every week there was, you know, bombings and bomb scares. And you know, I recall on one occasion I get off the bus at school, and a guy is shot dead in front of me. And
really?
at that time I remember teachers came out, and you just had to go to class. There was no, it didn't affect me, in all honesty, but I found it unusual compared to today, when that clearly wouldn't have happened.
What happened though? I mean, somebody was just, were they walking down the street, or had there been an incident and this was part of that?
Well, shootings then, this was in the 1980s, you know, it probably wasn't daily, but it was a weekly occurrence. So obviously, I'm not sure the circumstances of the chap that was shot or why he was shot, but he was shot dead. So on the Antrim Road.
Now, you went on to Queens.
Yes.
And then you were working for Securicor when you got the idea for the business Pivotal.
Indeed, Richard. Yeah. So I studied the School of Finance at Queens, and then kind of one of my first jobs, really real job, was with Securicor. And I was in London. I was the ATM director for the business. Obviously, this was at the turn of the century when, you know, I mean, cash was massively the preferred method of payment by everybody. And we could see, or I could see then, that, you know, that obviously technology was moving on, and that we as a business needed to evolve with it and be adding value to the customer proposition. And at that time, you know, the company, understandably, the cash board, they had a view, well, if you're prepared for us to come 7 days a week to collect your cash and process it, you know, why would we want to encourage anything that's going to dilute that? My view was that, no, I think we need to get ahead of the curve here. And with their blessing, I wanted to move home, and I said, listen, I'd like to set this up myself in Belfast.
Essentially, your idea involved buying and selling cash,
effectively,
not just moving it.
Yeah, effectively, not to complicate it. I mean, there's a lot of technology behind what we do, but essentially, we arbitrate cash. So we as a business, now we would process 12 to 14 billion of physical cash every quarter. You know, we have our own ATM network. It's less than 2,000 ATMs across the UK and Ireland. And we would put about just over 3 billion of cash through that. Last year, across all ATMs in the UK and Ireland, it was over 120 billion cash.
So your company owns the ATMs?
We own the ATMs. We operate the ATMs.
So whenever I see people in vehicles and they're moving cash around, mm-hmm. banks and shops and various things, I always assume that they have a contract to move cash for somebody else. But the cash that you're moving around is actually yours.
Well, it's both. When we move cash, I mean, any major retailer you name or bank, we would service them. And clearly that's not our cash. But a lot of the cash that we move, certainly in the ATMs, is our cash. And we're kind of unique, to go back to your original point. We arbitrate cash. So our view is that if we bring, let's say, coin as an example, if you're a car parker or a vending company, we will buy your coin off you at a discounted value. We collect it, obviously. We physically process it. We sort it by denomination. And then we sell that coin on to retailers that need that coin. And the bigger the gap, that's our margin. It's arbitration.
So I'll sell the cash to you in those vending machines because I don't want to have the hassle and the security and the risk of moving it around. And you take that risk, and that's how you make a margin
absolutely.
On it. Absolutely. The risk must be enormous. I mean, you've had robberies. You even had a tiger kidnapping situation, Terry.
Yes. I mean, security is obviously paramount in our business. In the 20 years since I established Pivotal, we've had, I'm sure, over 200 robberies, including a tiger kidnapping. We've had a branch taken over in London.
What happened? Did you get the call when the tiger kidnapping happened, and how did you respond to that?
Well, it's, you know, we have 1,200 staff and a fantastic senior management team. So we have SOPs in place, operating procedures, and the call will come in. In that occasion, ultimately, the call had to be made whether we were releasing the funds or not. And that would obviously come to myself, but with a fantastic team around me. And I'm delighted to say that our procedures worked absolutely perfectly.
And have you lost money through robberies?
Have we lost money? We've lost millions.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, how much in a single robbery?
The biggest one was a branch takeover in London. We lost about 5 million.
So whose money was that?
Well, it's insured, but we have a big deductible. So, you know, we take a portion of the pain.
And how often do these things happen?
Well, we have a lot of security in place, and certainly it's been mitigated now. It's not as prolific as it once was. But, you know, it's you're probably going to average 10 or 12 a year now. But the biggest risk in our industry is cyber, not physical.
But when you mentioned there about losing cash or if it's robbed and you have insurance, your insurance must cost a lot of money.
Again, it's millions. So we're in several million pounds in insurance. It comes with the territory. It's what we do. If the risk wasn't there, you know, you wouldn't need businesses like Pivotal. So, you know, it's we mitigate the risk. We have fantastic security around the business. But if you look, we have 550 vehicles operating.
And you actually have worked on developing your own vehicles for protection and security.
Absolutely. So we entirely build all our own vehicles. We have about a 20,000 square foot factory in Marshington and just outside Stoke. We build all our vehicles for the UK and Ireland. In Ireland, the vehicles are actually, it's very regulated, the industry. Well, as most things in Ireland are very regulated, but our industry is regulated. It's not regulated in the UK. So, you know, they're quite bespoke. The standard of the vehicle is different, you know, it's regulated by the PSA. So, yeah, we want to build our own, Richard, because then we're in control of the security, the software, the lead times, the build times.
I presume, Terry, that when you watch a heist movie, it's a different experience to when I watch a heist movie.
Absolutely, yeah. I try to avoid them, you know. Kind of things give me nightmares. But listen, it comes with the territory. You know, you've just got to move on.
Now, other things, I mean, the business, cash and the role of cash in society, people sort of talked about the demise of cash, and that's not happening. Cash is around very much and is likely to be into the future. And we see the story in the Irish Independent today where mm-hmm. our own state is recommending that people have, they always used to say you shouldn't store cash at home for security reasons, but they're sort of saying maybe you should have some in the event of cybersecurity, electronic payments go down, power cuts, etc., that people can just buy groceries. But what about the future of cash? I mean, is it going to be here? Who's still using it?
There is a real myth that you know, cash is dead. It's so untrue. I mean, if you look at the volumes that we ourselves are processing, you know, 3 in 5 people use cash at least once a week. There's a massive demographic across Europe that totally rely on cash. you know, older people are very reliant on cash. The article, interestingly, in the Independent today, encouraging people to store cash, and that's through the ECB, because of the cyber attacks, and we've had lots even over the last 12 months, where, you know, cash is a safe haven. People will fall back to it. You know, it's across Europe, 90% of retailers, it's the preferred method of payment. Not, it's not 90% of payments aren't cash, but it's their preferred accepted method of payment.
How big is the cybersecurity threat for what you do?
It's massive. I mean, it's really, we invest millions in a business. You know, we have our own IT department, our own developers. We're constantly penetration testing. If you think about it, Richard, we are de facto a bank. So what we're doing is we're collecting from, you know, major retailers across the UK and Ireland. We bring that cash back, we aggregate the cash, and then we either arbitrate it and use it for ATMs, ostensibly, or we have to get value for it and pay that to our customers. That value comes into what's called the treasury account, from where we make the payments to our customer.
Where are the biggest cyber threats coming from?
Well, in the last penetration testing that we ran as a business, most activity was actually coming from Russia. So, but that's, it's not exclusively from there. It could be from anywhere.
And for you, given that, okay, cash is still very much around, and its demise was greatly exaggerated, but how do you expand or grow your business into the future? Because it's not necessarily, the cash part isn't necessarily going to get bigger and bigger. Do you try and beat your competitors, or do you go into other areas?
Well, it's a bit of all of the above. So, you know, just on that, as I said, cash in circulation has actually increased every year, even over the last 3 years. So it's substantial. You know, over 100 million of transactions today across the UK and Ireland will be made in cash. So we see that there's still massive growth there. And we as a business are looking at geographic territories in terms of where we can take the cash side of our business. However, we aren't exclusively cash. You know, we have a fleet of, as I say, 550 vehicles, secure armoured vehicles, you know, 18 secure cash centres across the UK and Ireland. We acquired the master licence for mailboxes, etc., for Ireland about a year ago. And we're into global shipping of high value items, so storage and shipping and fulfillment of those items. And we see that, you know, we as a business, Richard, will do 100 million this year, and we have a target to take that business to 1 billion. Now, that sounds like a big jump, but we have a bridge in terms of how we're going to get there by penetrating those other verticals.
How do you handle the stress? Because there's clearly a lot. People running a business with 1,200 employees is a stressful thing, but what about outside of that, particularly the stress involved in this industry?
Well, listen, I feel that you have to persevere in whatever you're doing, and you know, one thing you're guaranteed is you're going to get hit. So you've got to take the blows, and you've got to be prepared to take them and keep pushing forward. I train a lot, you know.
You're still in the gym, are you?
I actually own a gym business called Revolution, and we're developing a fantastic new 16,500 gym square foot gym at the minute.
And you're into powerlifting as well.
I do. I've just recently started competing in powerlifting. I enjoy competition, and I think training and competition is a great stress relief. I really encourage it with my family and with my colleagues. I think it gives you the space mentally to really, you know, either focus on something at work or just completely divorce yourself from it.
And you bought a castle in Belfast.
I did buy a castle.
Castle Upton,
yes. I bought a castle just outside Belfast, 12 miles from the centre of Belfast. So I'm currently restoring and renovating that castle now. It makes absolutely no commercial sense, Richard.
Whatsoever. Are you going to move into it?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. The family are going to move into it, and there's quite a lot of land with it. So I'm farming now as well. I'm obviously not a farming stock, but so I've got a herd of belted Galloways that I've brought in.
And Upton Castle traces roots back to like the 12th or 13th century. I think it was built in the 1600s.
Yeah.
Big heating bill there, I'd say, Terry, when you move in.
Yeah, a substantial heating bill. But having said that, you know, again, with modern technology, I have a great team of architects and project managers there, and how we're going to put that underfloor heating in, use heat exchangers. And the walls are 5 foot thick. So once you heat it, it really is just about retaining the heat. So it's not as bad as it sounds.
Do you take a lot of, apart from the kickboxing and the powerlifting, do you take a lot of personal security on yourself? Do you manage that, or how important is that?
Obviously, it's very important. I personally have no access to cash, you know. So you know, if I turned up to a cash centre and asked to be let in, you know, immediately it'll go to Gold Command, and I'll not be allowed in, and it'll be notified that there's obviously an issue here. So I don't have any access to cash. Having said that, you know, I have a family, and you know, I have to protect myself and the family. So yeah, we have enhanced security, and have a team of people doing that for me.
You've done a huge amount. The business you're talking about, $100 million this year. Will you sell it? Will you? What would you like to do with it in the future?
Do you know, it's you're touching a raw nerve here, Richard. It's, you know, my wife would have me sell it tomorrow. She really would. And there are occasions, as from our conversation and some things, where I even think, right, you know what, do I need this? But it's like my fifth child, and you know, it's just, you know, I just passion. I love it. I know. I can't see myself.
And
not
how
being
does that
there.
Conversation go when you tell your wife?
Well,
no,
I'm hoping
not
she's
right
not
now.
Listening to this.
But you've been together a long time. You were childhood sweethearts.
We were childhood sweethearts. Yes, my wife. I've definitely got a face for radio. My wife's absolutely beautiful. So I don't know how she could.
But she's not listening to this.
We met when, as I said, I was kickboxing. You know, intensely kickboxing and competing at that time. So I wasn't really into girls as much, and we were friends, and at the age of sort of, I was 16, Kerry was 15, and you know, she couldn't shake me off.
Well, look, I think you should probably take her advice at some stage. I'd say at some point in the future you will.
Well, we'll see.
Well, Terry Hughes of Pivotal, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much for joining us on the programme.